I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, Pat.
Shute.
Here.
Thorndike.
Here.
McNaughton.
Here.
Mobo.
Here.
Needhammer.
Here.
Newton.
Here.
Place.
Here.
Ross.
Here. Consent agenda. Approval minutes from, everyone's here, so approval minutes of November 18th.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
I've got a motion, is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
Motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Let's move on to hearing citizens present for non-agenda items.
You told them that was their responsibility, didn't you?
No, they have to come up with the, all right. Let's move on to reports of officers, boards, and standing committees.
The marijuana task force met last Wednesday to start that process. This first meeting was basically to establish a strategy to engage the public. So we are anticipating developing some kind of informational document that can be distributed and then have a public meeting to kind of discuss that and get public input and move forward from there. Skylar was at the meeting, I guess, is that a pretty fair representation of what we did?
Yeah.
Okay. So we will be meeting again in January 27th and go over those materials, and then probably sometime in the spring schedule that public engagement meeting, the format and how that will be done. It hasn't been thought out yet, but it's not going to be a public hearing setting like this. It's probably going to be more of an informal kind of activity, engagement kind of thing. So stay tuned on that.
Do you have time for that meeting on the 27th, Scott?
No, I believe it's probably 5:30.
Okay.
That's just the committee that's...
Oh, gotcha. Understood. Thank you.
Yeah.
Question?
No, is it the intent for one city to become, start licensing distribution?
There's no intent.
Still up in the air?
There is no intent now. This is the whole point of this process.
Okay.
Is to get, engage the public and see exactly, you know, what is the will of the public and how do we want to deal with this.
The local Free Rag Express paper had a big article about Calcasa being very...
Yeah,
way out there.
So there's a series of options, you know, from absolutely no to absolutely yes, and all the things in between.
Right.
So we're basically going to see where are we at as a community and then move forward with that.
We got to get more input from everybody else before we even try to discuss anything about it.
The city initially opted out, though, right?
The city opted out of the recreational with the caveat that they will look at this issue further, because the reason that they opted out is there was really a lack of information and a lot of
the legislation.
In the legislature and you know, possible litigation. So there's a lot of unknowns. So they decided let's opt out and then reevaluate when we get better information.
Perfect.
And so that's what this process is now. The rules are in place, they're emergency rules right now. They probably will be the adopted rules, and they're pretty in-depth and complete, and I don't see those changing a lot as they adopt the permanent rules that regulate how this works. So those are kind of in place. The unknowns are more like if there's any litigation and decisions at the court level and how that will, you know, affect the application of the law and those kinds of things. And those will probably play out in years as opposed to the next few months here.
One more question for you. So with that upcoming meeting that's for the committee, would any of us on the planning commission still be welcome to sit in on that? Or is that kind of...
Well, all public meetings are open to the public, but you wouldn't be able to participate in the committee.
Got it. Gotcha. Okay.
And interestingly, the public vote was about a 60-40 ratio to legalize marijuana within the city limits. That was the ratio.
Mm-hmm. You mean for the prop? The last vote, we had a proposition.
Yeah, it was 60-40. Pretty close.
Not sure.
I think we'll see the number rise as we get more information out to the public, too.
Okay. Any other questions?
Different topic. I didn't know if you're done with your report.
Is it a board or committee?
That's it?
Is it another board or committee?
Is the question about another board or committee?
No, it's just a quick question about last month, the property maintenance code. We got into that. What's the next step on
that? That's probably more good the order kind of
thing. Okay. Yep. All right.
Thank you, Larry. All right. Any other?
No.
Okay. There's no more unfinished business. Let's move on to new business. The review of the trail route alternatives.
Okay. Took us a lifetime on our monitors as I have the map up, unfortunately. Okay. Still some technical glitches here. But you should all have the maps in your hard copy documents there. As you know, there was an initial public meeting to get input on this, and the desire is to get additional input. By no means is this the trail final plan. This is just to begin the discussion. So the goal is just to get input and then take this plan to the public and get their input and then finalize a plan that can be implemented. So this is the point of the night, just to kind of get some feedback from the planning commission in regards to the trail location. The biggest concerns that we have are, you know, that first segment and the second segment there. I think having a trail on the south side of the road is the optimal location. We don't want to have multiple crossings in that area, especially when you get down by the corner. There's a lot of things going on. It's not really a good place to cross. So the desired outcome is to have the trail located on the south side of the road for the entire distance. With that said, that has a number of challenges, and some are there's a limited room and some topography challenges once you get closer in. So to develop it there is going to have to deal with those. The desire would be to have a trail that we could fund through the trust fund, but having that has to be built to certain standards. There you have to have at least a 10-foot trail, 5-foot separation from the road, 2-foot separation from the right-of-way, or clear it. So you have a lot of built-in space eaten up with, you know, a grant fundable trail. If the city designed and built it on its own without any grant funding, you have a little more flexibility. You can have a narrower trail, you don't have those separation distances, and that's kind of the proposal for that segment two there. You know, we did get some feedback from some of the residents in that segment one there. There are concerns about the proximity of the trail. If it is has that separation distance, it's going to be pretty close to some houses. And, you know, that, they're worried about conflicts with that. The trail is designed to go in the right-of-way through the entire way. So we would not be looking for any easements or any property acquisitions from anybody, so it's in the right-of-way. But even so, if it's in the right-of-way, you know, some older homes were built much closer to the road than would be permitted today, and they kind of cause that, you know. So with that said, you know, let's open up the planning commission for discussion and input.
Open up for discussion. Larry?
Question. The 10-foot width of bike trail you see is grant funding.
Yes, that's the ASHTO designs are for a 10-foot wide trail, and they have to be built to that design to be qualified for funding through the Michigan Natural Resource Trust Fund.
Okay, the Charlevoix County bike trail between Boyne City and Charlevoix, My recollection is that it's not 10 feet wide.
It's 10 feet wide.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it would not have been funded if it was not.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that is, that would be an equal width.
Yep.
Was there any talk, I mean, you kind of alluded to that, was there any talk to the city finding a way to fund segment one and two to do a narrower, and then with the rest of the trip, is it all or nothing? Is it the whole trail, or could we do part of the trail through the funding?
I think part of it can be done through the funding, and mm-hmm. how much would be grant eligible, I think,
sure.
is a decision that we need to make. You know, that phase one there would be desirable to have it paid for by...
Oh, absolutely, because it's got all the...
But how do you balance that requirement of that trail with those property,
But everything's taking place in the right-of-way?
Yes.
There's no concern about it being a taking grant and that, or people
no,
worrying
no,
about
it was,
looking like that?
No, there is no portion of the trail that would be in this area.
Sure.
When we talk closer to the city hall here by Honeywell, then we're talking about music there. But for this portion of the trail, it's all within the right of way.
Okay.
Scott, do you have any discussions that have with Honeywell? Proposed with them when you guys are talking about the
board? Mike has reached out to them, but I think they've had a recent change in leadership over there, so they've been kind of tough to get a hold of. So that would be a negotiation. You know, and that's a preferred option to bring along,
sure.
along the lake. You know, an alternative is to keep it next to the road and do it that way. And maybe come do it that way first, build the trail, and then as an opportunity arrives later, maybe you can relocate a portion down on the river mm-hmm. or the water.
Sure.
Okay, question. There was some feedback that Pat forwarded to us about the segment one.
Yes.
That the residents seemed to not want the separated trail, but were more in favor of the adjacent trail just because the amount of right of way that it would be.
And then, yeah, exactly.
Now, I think there is some merit to that, but then the second way to look at this, would that reduce some of the utility work required if it is adjacent as opposed to separated? Because, I mean, looking at these pictures of the telephone poles being right.
Yeah, there's going to be utility work regardless of the location of the trail. There's a lot of poles on that way, and we'd have to be relocated.
Were those placed in the appropriate utility easement, Scott?
They're in the right way.
So. So the city would have to foot build a sidewalk to relocate.
Well, there's a negotiation. I think I'd prefer to have the utility move them. I mean, it's our right of way, and we have the right to use it. They have some rights to use it as well. So
is that still consumers and all that?
They would have to. But they're not going to do it easily.
And then the other consideration about having the south side was for safety as well.
That was the primary concern. Early this year, staff and our engineer and some trail consultants walked the trail, with looking at all the options. And it was a consensus of all of us that the trail on the south side is the preferred option. It's just there's no good way to cross back and do it safely. So I think that's kind of one of the givens that we need to work around.
Mm-hmm. At what point along Boyne City Charlotte were they planning on taking the trail from the north side to the south side? Like down your quarter line? Because it kind of stops at Springwater Beach now, and then it stops at quarter line, doesn't it?
Yeah.
On the Charlotte Boyne side?
I don't remember.
And that's out in north.
As I said, somewhere.
Yeah. I think it was more like Fort Bay area, which I can't remember.
Right.
So, I'm
not sure.
Yeah,
I was just curious.
Pay attention to that.
Right. Right. I was just curious to that kind of pertaining to a little bit. But.
Right. I mean, sometimes crossings are inevitable. You have to cross.
Right.
But if you can do it without, I mean, that's the better, because we're looking at, you know, the more advanced bike riders, they're going to take the road in, they're going to ride like this. So the primary demographic that we're looking at is family and kids and whatnot.
State park.
Yeah, coming from the state park, coming in, and I've witnessed it myself, you know, the kids in this area that come in the trail, and it's kind of unfortunate, it kind of dumps them, and all of a sudden they're on their own.
Right.
So you see them crossing here and there without any good direction, so. So I don't think there's any doubt that keeping on the south side.
I agree, because I think getting them off the road to come down Lower Lake was a really smart choice.
Right, right, and that's a good, you know, benefit there. That's such a low utilized road that it basically conserves the trail.
Right.
So, you know, we can use that portion.
When it gets them off just that nasty corner all the way through there, you know.
Do you have an estimated cost for segment one and segment two?
Yes, I do. I think the segment one is about $150,000.
Okay.
No, I didn't. I don't get it.
Segment two is about $300,000.
And you're looking for the grant to fund both segment one and two, or?
Well, right now, base two is that it's not fundable through the grant.
Segment two is not.
So in a way, segment one is, it is now, but given some of the concerns, it may need to be redesigned, so it would not be eligible.
Was there, does this reflect that there was a conversation about extending segment one a little bit further into segment two?
Right, I think that was the
desire. Is that reflected here?
No.
No, this was the same exact.
This is the only initial drawing that has come up. We haven't, you know, it's too early to start bringing design concepts.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, the public's going to be engaged and additional committees are going to be engaged before any additional drawings are developed.
And then from us, as a planning commission, we're just giving you a recommendation.
Just observation, comments, recommendations.
Yeah, so.
I would say one thing, though, is if you go on the road side of Honeywell, then I would recommend staying on perhaps a separated at road across the open space. Because it dive in, come back out, then all of a sudden dive back in at the city hall, and then all the way out, it's a lot of in and out.
Well,
so
well,
it's almost like it wants to be straightened out at that point.
Right, but Larry, where it was in the open space during the meeting, they had said that's not correct, because we haven't decided yet what's actually happening in
right.
the space.
Yeah. Right.
So it's probably not going to dive in and dive out.
Yeah. I think the concept of the drawing
rail will probably help dictate how that runs. Anyway.
Yeah, the concept for the drawing is basically to show it going into the park somehow.
Right.
Whether or not it goes all the way down there. But some of the comments that we've received so far is it may be preferable to keep it out by the road in a straight shot, as opposed to coming in and meandering through the park,
just like
because you may have a conflict with people walking to the beach and also bikers biking through. So you may want to separate that by keeping that bike trail out by the road. And then, you know, if there are some further trails or walking trails through the park, you know, those could serve the have people that just kind of walk through there.
Yeah.
But I think it's been clear that probably the better location for the bike trail is to keep it up by the road.
Right.
Cool.
In that location. And then, you know, to dive it down by the water at some future location, perhaps by Honeywell, if an easement can be worked out with them. If not, then bring it down to the north side of the city hall here, and then bring it down through that open area in some manner. You know, this is, again, it's a concept, so it may take some other form in that area as well.
Just a comment. So my fiance, he was in a pretty horrific bike accident right there at the open space on the 4th of July 2 years ago. And I think, you know, for him, he's a road biker, so those road bikers, they like the side of the road anyways, but that open space right there was actually right where he was hit. So I personally think that if you can get it in close to the lake, it might be safer. So that would be my comment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's
See, I kind of like looking at it from the boat launch to the river. You have the sidewalk in front of City Hall, you have the sidewalk in front of Honeywell, and you have the open space, and then you have the sidewalk through the park. I think potentially that could be instead of a 5-foot sidewalk, a 10-foot path, straight shot, and it gets them right downtown, they're off the road. It just kind of makes sense to me to keep that along the road and wide. I can see a separation for the safety issue. Mm-hmm. But
and if we were to do this with trail, then we'd have to have that 5-foot buffer as well.
Yeah, so it would be a separated trail from the road.
Yeah, a 5-foot buffer makes a big difference.
But what I guess what I'm saying is we have a 5-foot buffer out here in front of City Hall, in front of Honeywell. We could create it as an open space because that's an open design. I mean, that's a nice long straight shot. Mm-hmm. Another point I want to make that Hugh Conklin made, which I didn't think about, he says, okay, everybody, we're thinking about coming into town, but we're not really thinking about going out of town. So when you're going out of town and you're riding on this, and you're not, don't have that 5-foot buffer, you're riding basically into traffic, which is, you know, as you're heading back to the state park, if you're on the south side of the road, which, if it's 10-foot wide, it should not be a problem, but you still don't have that separation at phase 2, or somewhere in there.
Segment two.
So he had a good point, riding back out, going in the opposite direction, it's a little bit different. Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit hairier.
Yeah.
Over Thanksgiving, I had an opportunity to walk on a good chunk of the Little Traverse Wheelway from like West Conway Road all the way into Petoskey. And my favorite parts of that walk were when it went back by the lake, away from the road. And so I know some people were talking about possibly cutting out Veterans Park, but that was the best part of the trail. And that would be a very cool, best part of our trail.
Mm-hmm. And then that, I think that scene of you that we can get to the lake is part of the draw of biking.
Yeah. Anyone else have any comments or?
I had a question in regards to how we notify, other than just announcing the meetings, especially some of these higher impact areas for residential areas. Are they being sent anything in the mail to encourage feedback?
These people are going to be contacted individually.
Okay.
And they've already had, our DPW director has had personal contact with a couple of them. So they'll be encouraged to come to future public informational meetings that I know they want to get their opinions on. So the process for this is we'll go back, to the Parks and Rec Committee and their body and for final design. So it'll have a couple meetings there, I'm sure, and then ultimately it'll go to the City Commission for their
Okay, because I looked at segment one and where it sits for the highest impact of that 35 foot within the easement. There's 15 property owners and 6 of them want to be permanent residents. So, I mean, that's something that I think we should take into consideration to the impact of those that are locally around, especially if we're looking at families and children utilization.
Yeah. And that was the Parks and Rec Commission discussed this last Thursday, and they had a similar conclusion that those folks do need to be engaged as part of the process. So.
That's true, totally true. On the other hand, it's the right of way. They think of it as their driveway in their front yard, but it's really in the right of way. So there has to be some communication and some compromise and some quality design to make everybody happy. Well, it won't make everybody happy. If nobody's happy, then it's the perfect design, right?
Interesting, I'm sure other committees will talk about this. All right.
review your 2020 residential target market analysis.
This is an update of market analysis that was initially done 10 years ago. And it says a lot of the same things, and unfortunately, I won't have it on the screen. But we emailed you the complete packet with all the municipalities, and just the state paper, we just made copies of just the Boyne City and the county section. So, probably one of the first things you want to look at is that, we'll just talk about the city, is the market potential for Boyne City new build and rehab year 2020. Now, each one of those graphs are a representation of the same group. So there's 228 total folks in that group. So as you can see, there's a significant demand for additional units in the city. And this group shows 155 detached units and 73 attached units. It should be noted that detached units aren't just single-family residential. They're talking about duplexes and cottages and accessory dwelling units as detached units. So that number is just not single-family. The attached units are like apartments, rentals, those kinds of things. So, so in that 228 units, you can see that the rental segment is by far the much larger one. That's the market that is being really underserved right now. So with 171 potential units as opposed to 57 of the owners. So then you look at the bottom there, that last graph. So you get the owners, the detached units, and those include duplex units and traditional houses, that's 57. And then you have 98 detached units, and these are specifically for duplexes, cottages, accessory dwelling units, and renters is 73. So you can definitely see that the rental market is a lot of potential there. And then you start looking at the values, and you kind of see what.
Scott, I'm going to interrupt you.
Oh, great.
Yeah, especially in the line of work that I'm in, I reread this like four times, and admittedly, I still have some difficulty in making sense of these numbers.
Okay.
With what we're seeing here on the graph, we have on you know, like the y-axis, the number of housing units. Is that in the market potential, the need of that many more units,
yes,
rather than what is currently being, you know,
that's the units. Annual potential.
Okay.
This is annual every year.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, that helps a little bit.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, it's just kind of tough to grasp these numbers in the context of what we've written. All right.
So if you look at the home values for maximum number of new builds or rehabs annually by total home value, it looks like $150,000 is the sweet spot. So if there's units for sale, there's a lot of potential in that area right now. And I think, you know, common sense kind of tells you that as well. I mean, the market is not being served because the limitation on builders, they build basically the high dollar, high margin items as opposed to the lower ones because they have their choice and they can make more money. If they're going to be busy, they might make as much money as they can. So this is really the market that's being underserved. And then in the rents, you can see $700 to $800 is a sweet spot for those, and so that's definitely. I think some of the changes that we're making to the ordinance are going to help that. You know, we're looking at making it easier for accessory dwelling units, and making it easier for rentals or attached units. So I think we're helping in that. Best we can, but still,
more construction.
Again, that's what we need.
That's potential.
Not inventory.
Yeah, that's not inventory. This is market potential.
So for 2000, for 2020, we really need.
Yeah. So this study is probably best served in people that are developing housing to give them an idea of what, you know, the markets are, what the rents are, and what the need is, and if they want to build, you know, what they think they may have. But, you know, you have, let's see, 4 units above 275,000. So, you know, a builder would say, I'll just build 4 of those as opposed to 10 of these. You know, so, and that's the challenge.
And then, right around the $800 range, that was kind of the low for the loss, I remember.
Yeah, exactly. Which would be assistance, like the wages. Yeah.
Well, there were 80% AMI or 60% of the units were designated for that, and the rest would be.
What was the rent for those lofts? A typical rent for like a one bedroom?
Well, the ones that are indexed to the AMI, I don't know, because
it's
going to be different. Yeah, so there's going to be probably $600-$700, depending on the unit, depending on.
If I've read this correctly, these numbers are based off a family size of 2.5, yes. Which does make a difference. Obviously, you wouldn't need a 4-bedroom house necessarily for a 2.5 family.
Right. Exactly.
It also reinforces these numbers may not be representative for the loss on Lake.
Because
the workforce housing and single folks.
But with 60 and 44, so 104 units are needed in that $700 to $800 range.
Yeah.
That could kind of coincide with, I think, Jane from the Housing Commission, which is income-based and age-based. Well, no, some aren't. She has a list. A year ago, her list was 103 people waiting for housing at either Deer Meadows or Lipsenberger, or for units that are for families. Mm-hmm. So it kind of reinforces what that.
Yeah, and then you still, if you look at the very low, you know, low income, $300 to $500 range, and there's a need there as well. Mm-hmm. You know, that's almost 50 units a year that you need to accommodate those people.
And is this all based on like our current growth as a city? Is that kind of where it's going as well? Or?
Well, the methodology for the study is well beyond my expertise. It's a professional firm that was contracted by Network Northwest to do this, and they had a nice presentation at the Housing Summit in Traverse City, kind of explaining how this is. You know, a lot of it's, I mean, you know, they get a lot of data from various sources and compile it to come up with these projections and potentials.
Okay. So for the homes, the detached or duplex, if one was to look at a range of construction costs of $150 to $200 a square foot, we would be talking the need is somewhere between 750 to 1,000 square foot per unit.
Our ordinance provides for that.
Yeah, I'm just kind of looking at what, you know, what the
and that's a lot of what I'm hearing is that the typical 3-bedroom ranch isn't really the need anymore. It's more of a 1-bedroom, you know, or 2 people living together, you know, smaller families. So the larger houses are not as big as need anymore. There's also, you know, I think the rentals kind of spell that out, is that they're transitional kind of housing, where someone will rent for a year or two and then move on. And we don't have a lot of that either.
There's also in this same document, though, that it follows up that most contractors or builders aren't building homes for those needs of
right.
Leasing mm-hmm. and the price per acre. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of difficult to compile a factor.
Exactly. Well, the cost of construction is just astronomical.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But even if you can make the numbers work, who's going to, it would be opted to sell versus to lease.
Mm-hmm.
So again, this is just another resource document that we can use as we go through our processes, and builders can use it, and developers can use it to engage on the market potential. And
sure. Would this be updated information for our master plan as well, or?
Yeah, this would be included in our master plans.
No, I knew it was before, but do we just update it every time this information comes out?
No. It's its own independent document. So right. When we update our master plan, we can refer to it and get information from it.
Sure.
Did they include a family one at all, other than the 2.5? Did they include anything larger than the family size?
Well, that is purpose of the analysis. They look at averages. So that's what they do, is they kind of have an average so they can get a big picture. This is kind of a 40,000 foot view. So no, that's kind of what they would use to generate all their potential estimates.
My question is, so this proves that we have a need. I mean, so we have 171 rentals. I don't understand the total of new builds. Is there a total there? Between detached and attached, owners, renters, I guess.
There's 228 total there.
Yeah, that's the same
total.
So 228 plus 171.
No, 228 is the total group of each one of those. So each one of those graphs represents the same 228.
Okay.
And this study breaks it down in different segments.
And that's per year, potentially. So my frustration is that with this data, we can't attract a developer that wants to come into Boynton City. We have a developer doing 220-some units in Gaylord. There's a developer in Traverse City that's announced 200-some. Why can't we attract it to Boynton City?
Well, I think infrastructure is a big part of that puzzle, and that's one of the big limiting factors on Ted Maxey's property. By the time he gets sewer and water and road and all that run into the property and serve, those allow 220 some units that were permitted, the cost is just puts it out of range of the market that he's looking for. So that's, when you can plop them down inside the city like they did in Gaylord, where all that stuff is already surrounding you and available, so all you have to do is run service lines. You don't have to run, mains and roads and all that stuff. That reduces that cost significantly. So, like a loss on Lake Street, I think that's the model, is, the downtown development, where it falls, you don't have to develop infrastructure. And they still need, significant assistance to make this work. They require the tax assistance from the city, and they're using other revenue sources from the state to make the numbers work for that one. And that's part of the puzzle, is to, get additional resources to bring to the table that will make these projects work. The state has, for the last few years, concentrated on the bigger cities. Really haven't had a lot of assistance in the rural areas. I hear there are some changes that may happen. There's discussions going on, so maybe there'll be some new resources available to us, in the future, but, nothing's firm yet.
So to clarify, from one understanding that you said, infrastructure is available within the Central Business District and areas close to the Central Business District that does make development much easier.
Yeah. If you don't have to run a sewer main or a water main or build a road, it's going to be a lot easier.
So in other words, there are certain districts where it does make more sense to have multifamily zoning.
Anywhere where you have those existing facilities, you don't have to extend them.
Yeah. Right. So perhaps when we do our master plan, we need to take that into account. What would make sense for as far as utilities and infrastructure.
Right, and I think we already recognize that fact through our zoning
by enabling multifamily in the Central West District.
Right.
So, it doesn't make much sense to zone property out on the fringes that doesn't have access to anything, multifamily.
Well, yeah, that's the maximum property, yeah.
Well, that's the thing, is, water sewer runs right out at the road, it's right next to it.
Right.
So the connection's relatively easy, but he still has to run a main and serve all those, and build a road in to serve all those. So.
Okay.
And that costs us too much. Mm-hmm.
But there are some developments in Boyd City that aren't developed either. I mean, you look at Harvard Heights, and that's still a field.
Right. Because I think there they misjudged the market. Mm-hmm. They have covenants in there for minimum sizes and those kinds of things. So, and I don't think those are really the need. They're higher end houses there, and those come in.
Oh yeah.
Relatively, infrequently.
Well, yeah, you see only what, 4 units per year above 250. Required.
Right, and I think that market's being met, from the number that's being built. So
then the manufactured home, that development that's going to be taking place, that'll solve some of this.
That'll definitely help. Mm-hmm. That'll definitely help. They're having some of their own issues working through the state right now. They have to overcome some challenges with the retention ponds, and they have a setback requirement from retention areas that we don't have. Mm-hmm. So the houses along Lake Street that were within 25 feet of the proposed retention ponds would not be allowed. So they're looking at reconfiguring those retentions to do it underground as kind of leaching fields and that kind of thing to eliminate those ponds. And so the worry is that there'll be open water right next to these houses, which the retention ponds are basically dry most of the time.
Especially
if you're across the street from the lake, I don't get the concern.
So, what is the status of the State and Lake Street development? Is that going to break ground soon?
Next spring, I believe, is their anticipated timeline. I believe their funding is in place, and all their approvals from the city are in place, so it's just their timeline.
And that was, 200 units, or 80? No, it's about 80, right?
No.
42.
40.
40?
Okay. 44.
So that doesn't even...
No.
It kind of touches some of the need.
Yeah. It's shooting that market that we need, yeah.
Yeah.
It's right in the wheelhouse.
Did you see the school's announcement that they bought? There's 12 more lots at Matty Lane, which is where they built before up off of Jefferson. But they've made an agreement. Now, that's a development that already has water and sewer at each site, but the lots haven't sold in 20 years. So I think they said, okay, you can do a little smaller footprint, and you can pay us after you sell the house. And so the building trades, it's a great win-win situation.
Yeah. So that's another one of those self-imposed requirements that kind of defeated the purpose of developing houses, or having larger footprint requirements and larger home requirements. People didn't need that.
Do we know what the selling price of those houses are going to be? Because I know that in years past it's been over $200,000.
Yeah. No, because
that right the main.
And that's why they kind of refigured what they're doing with the houses on Pleasant. Mm-hmm. Instead of building one big one, they're building two smaller ones. I'm not quite sure what those will sell for, but you said they had to get less than what they have been, in the past.
Well, the two up by Avalanche on Wilson Street were supposedly hitting that smaller market, and they were thinking, yes, we're going to be in that range, it makes more sense, and at the school board meeting, people came in and offered cash over and above, cash for 240.
Right, that's what I was kind of getting at. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so. I've been a long time. They're wonderful houses,
And the ones up on Pleasant Valley actually have garages attached, which I don't know, they're just different than the ones up on Wilson Street.
Wilson has a single car attached.
Does it have a single car attached?
Yeah, but, yeah. You want to hit that market, and then people offer more, schools are going to take it. The salary's going to take the money.
Is anyone else have any questions about it? It's always interesting every year going through it.
My comment is, after reading all this, I'm also trying to, you know, chew on it a lot. I printed out my statistics that I give out to my private clients of the last 3 years and not waterfront sales. And the metrics I give out to my clients are average asking price, sale price, number of homes sold, average day on market, and the number of homes sold in a given year, and then the average price of the homes sold over the year. And the change in the rate at that. So I do that both for the non-waterfront homes in Wood City proper, and then I do Lake Charmin Wood for waterfront clients. And I find it interesting that in my trends for 2018, and of course I'll be doing 2019 here shortly, Boyne City grew by 12% in the price of homes sold over the year with an increased trend in the amount of homes sold. And everywhere else for Northwest Michigan, residential sales went down 24.4%. And I just found it interesting. Again, there's that wild desirability to be in Boyne City, and it really reflects in the numbers and statistics too. So, and then so here I was trying to piece that with what is this, this market potential. And I still just wonder how this really, transfers to what I do in my work. Mm-hmm. I don't know, I still couldn't quite make it to merge.
Following up on that goes back to my point of the family thing. With children in the Boyne City School District, I know that the Boyne City School District is one of the only growing ones in Chelsea County. So with this, pinpointing on the average 2.5, I feel like that's missing a key component of our city that is coming into the growth. Mm-hmm.
You think it's missing the families?
Well, yeah, because if you have housing that's only good for one, one bedroom, maybe two bedroom, but a small family, if you have two kids, you have two, a boy and a girl, you're not going to want to stick them in that one bedroom for their entirety of their childhood. You reach a point where privacy is important, and then you're outside of that range of $150,000. But if you look beyond and look at the income portion, that's really kind of where we need to kind of look at too for what our city holds for affordability.
But I guess if we're still going to talk in statistics as well, family size is smaller than ever, which even I don't think we're having a population of family and replacement rate of the U.S. population. So I mean, it also makes some sense in line that if they're looking at that size too. I mean, how many families do we have for that size rate? So I think again, just speaking of averages and statistics, it still somewhat shoots towards that average.
Well, you have to think of it. It is an average 2.5.
Yeah.
So it takes into account one person, it takes into account four persons. So it's an average. So those are all part of that equation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's singles as well as there's families. So.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so what you're saying is you think there should be more larger homes?
No, I'm not saying necessarily larger homes, but I mean, if we're focusing on one bedroom homes, I think we're going to miss that component of young families too, that, or even the growing family. Renters are there, because from my understanding, a lot of people are choosing to rent because of the responsibility and the weight of home ownership, especially if it's at a point where most of them are at $225,000, that's not achievable. So.
Mm-hmm. Just to follow up on that too, if you want to take a look at just what Boyne City non-waterfront sales is, has the waterfront behind it, but if you want to look at the stats around, the stats are interesting, if anything, but take a look at it.
But yeah, this is all just information to take into it.
Sure.
As well, so.
Okay. I find it interesting the break points in the income. It's broken down every 5,000, 25 to 30, 30, 35, and all of a sudden you get down to 55 to 85, and you do a 30 grand break points. Like, huh?
No. It's how they like to make graphs.
I guess. This is just very strange.
Yep. Any other questions? Staff report?
The Moyne City, Moyne Falls Trail, the construction for the year is almost complete. The boardwalk is complete at Moyne Mountain. There's a little bridge portion that they're going to probably do this week that's on the city portion. It's just east of where the logistics area, you start going down the railroad there. And once they're done with that, they'll wrap up construction for the season. So then hopefully start early in the spring and meet their July or June 12th completion date. Mm-hmm. So we're still looking for an additional person for this board. Mm-hmm. So if you know anybody that's interested, please let me get a hold of me. I'll be more than happy to give you the information. That's all I got.
Okay, we'll go to the order. I'd like to first warmly welcome the call to our board. Thank you so much.
Nice to have you aboard.
Nice to have you aboard. Larry, you had a question earlier?
Oh, yeah. What's the status of the property maintenance code? I know it was supposed to be going to the city commission. Is that correct?
The city commission wanted to schedule a work session to review the code. And preferably with our hearing officer, Don Gilmet. So we had coordinated schedules, and last week we set a meeting date. Was it the 21st of January, something like that? A work session has been scheduled with the city commission and Mr. Gilmet to go over the property maintenance code and answer any questions they have. And then once they're comfortable with it, we'll bring it back to them for a first reading and then hopefully adoption.
Good.
Okay. Anyone else?
I have a question. Mm-hmm. What is the legality of snow removal and where people can put their snow?
I think you should talk to the police department about that.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just can't plow across the road as far as I know.
No, I'm bored though. I never plow in my yard.
That's somebody else's yard.
My opinion would be that trespass, and you can tell him that. So
yeah.
If he doesn't have your permission to put it on your property.
Just curious.
Sorry. All right.
Another good of the order. I might not get back on my soapbox. Here we have all this thing about the about meeting home and that. Still think that the short-term rentals are using up a lot of homes that could be in that amount. And I would ask you to look at the bed and breakfast requirement to see whether we've already got some of this in place that we just need to modify it.
We do have bed and breakfast currently in place.
But it appears to be very similar to what we need for short-term rentals, and if it could just be expanded in some way.
Okay. All right. Can I just get a motion for adjournment?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Have a motion to adjourn?
Second.
Motion and second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. Opposed? All right. We'll meet you back here January 20th.